And good morning, Scott Spears, along with you on this Tuesday, December the 3rd, 2019, 11 minutes past the hour. You're tuned in to the Now program here on WWGH Radio, and we're going to kick off the program this morning in a very interesting way, bringing you up to date on something that happened just yesterday. Now, before we do that, we do want to remind everybody that if you want to get your letters out to Santa Claus, you can still do that. Santa Claus, P.O. Box 1, Santa Claus, Indiana, 47579. That's Santa Claus, P.O. Box 1, Santa Claus, Indiana, 47579. You will get a letter back from Santa Claus if you get that letter out early enough. Now, if you want to send a Christmas card here to WWGH Radio, and we have got some already, you mail it to WWGH Radio, 165 West Center Street, Suite 208, Marion, Ohio, 43302. Put your return address on the card, and we will send you a card back, and we will display your card in the studio. So that's the housekeeping that needs to be done here this morning. And now we're going to move on to a story that was a long time in the making, and honestly turned into one of the most interesting stories, I think, in Marion political history. Now, we've followed this first ward, Marion City Council first ward, very closely. It was a vacated seat by Robert Landon as he left to run for auditor. We had two people in that ward, the Democrat and the Republican, neither of which had ever run for public office. The ward was Democrat. As I say, it was Robert Landon's seat that he was vacating to run for auditor. We had the election in November, and on election night, there was a 4-vote swing toward the Democrat, Kai Meade. And then we needed to count our provisional ballots. So we counted our provisional ballots, and that got us down to one vote, a 1-vote swing for Kai Meade at that point, which led to a recount of the votes, mandatory recount. Well, that mandatory recount happened yesterday, or the results, I should say, of that mandatory recount were released yesterday, and the votes did not change. So the now final tally in the first ward city council race, a month after the election, is Kai Meade, the Democrat, defeats the Republican challenger 277 votes to 276. Now, if that doesn't say every vote counts, I don't know what would. So we're so glad to be welcomed in the studio as we have through this whole process. By now, the person we can safely say who will be your next first ward city councilman, the Democrat, Kai Meade. Kai, how's it feel to have it all done?
I'm glad it's over. I'm glad we're through it. It took a little longer than I expected it to, but I'm just glad it's done.
Take us through the process yesterday of what happens in a recount, because they don't happen a whole lot.
Yeah, so me and my opponent met at the Board of Elections. We sat down with the board, and they did a hand count of the votes that were there of a precinct to see if they matched. And then after that, they put them through the machine again just to triple check, I suppose. And after that, we kind of just sat with the results. So after the hand count, we were even. Everything was normal, so I felt pretty safe about it, but we stuck around until everything was final, because once you're a month past election day, what's another 20 minutes?
Now, this turned into a very interesting race, because on election night, what we knew was that the 6th ward, which had been Republican, Rick Huddle's seat, he was leaving that seat, so that was also an open seat, had went to Kathy Swanger, who is an independent. She defeated the Republican Billy Mayberry. I think most people would say that Kathy Swanger tended toward the Democratic side. I think that's how Democrats have seen it, that I've talked to. So the Democrats felt that irregardless of what happened in the first, they had picked up a seat, which even if the Republican in the first had won, it would have just made city council even at this particular point. And the tie-breaking vote, which would have been president of city council, Todd Snyder, I believe he now identifies himself as a Democrat. So I think Democrats felt pretty good, but now we know that the first ward, which was Republican, has now swung Democrat. So this really came down to one vote for the majority of city council.
Yeah, one way or another, one of the parties was going to have a majority through the first ward.
And one vote.
Yep, that's all it takes. I'm just glad I had my fiance in a good mood that day.
Now, when you look at all the work you did in preparing for this, why do you think it came down to one vote?
You know, elections are never easy. Anybody that tells you otherwise is probably doesn't have too much experience in them. And you know, you have to be able to deal with a lot of different political environments, and especially throughout the campaign season and on election day. We had a low turnout. That's something that we figured out early on when they posted a list of who had voted at 11 a.m. Once I realized that we had a low turnout, I could potentially be in trouble, because low turnout tends to not bode well for Democrats. I went and printed off a list of some more doors to hit, and I figured I've been doing this since April, so I might as well for the next 4 hours hit some more doors, and apparently it made a good difference.
When you went out on election day and did that, did you feel you had changed anybody's mind? Do you feel that you had made somebody go to the poll who maybe was not going to go to the poll?
Well, the doors that I targeted on election day were people that I knew would vote for me if they went and voted. So there were actually probably 6 or 7 people that I talked to that said, hey, or that said, oh, I forgot today was election day, or something like that. Or maybe they were 50-50 on whether or not they were going to go. Some people don't always go if it's not a presidential year. And so I think it did help, because it's the middle of the day, so not everyone's home, but I'm sure glad I did it.
Is it... Because obviously if you end up on the winner's side, it's a much better feeling, I would imagine. But we've talked about this here. Is it easier to lose by a lot or lose by one, would you imagine?
I think it depends on who you are. I think I personally would rather just get whooped than lose close. But, you know, there's pros and cons to both sides of it. If you lose close, you know, you did a lot of things right, and the smallest thing could have made the difference for you. Whereas if you're somebody that doesn't want to think about that, then maybe you'd rather lose by a lot. But there's definitely both two different sides to it.
About 500 people, a little over 500 people, turned out in the first ward to vote. Very low turnout. Did that end up in the end, do you think, favoring you, now that we look at it?
I would say that it hurt more than anything. Like I said, Republicans are always very good at turning out no matter what, and so I felt like I would be better off with a higher turnout, especially in the first ward, looking at the numbers and figuring out, hey, here's how many votes you need to win depending on turnout. I felt like as turnout went up, I had a better chance.
What do you think happened this time that caused lower voter turnout, even lower than 4 years prior?
I'm not 100% sure. I think that it's probably not just one thing. There's probably just a mix of all kinds of stuff that can lead to a low turnout. But it's like I said, it's just one of those things that I don't think that we can ever know for sure. Maybe it's just people are gearing up for 2020 presidentially, and that's what they're following, or maybe there just wasn't that much excitement for this year compared to past years. Who knows?
When we take a look back at it, you had talked about how you felt that you were out knocking on doors. How do you think your work ethic in trying to get elected, your campaigning, compared to your opponents, now that we know what the results are?
Well, you can never be sure of what your opponent is doing 100%, but I would say that just by the sheer number of doors that I was hitting, I felt like it was very unlikely that anyone was coming close to me in total doors knocked or total hours put in, because I'd say towards the back end of the election, I was doing probably 30 to 35 hours a week.
Well, something that's interesting, and I think we all look at this, in the first ward, we know now because of the little bit of the mess that happened on election day, the whole issue with Robert Landon and the Republican Party putting out a sample ballot, and that'll all be hashed out in the court system. I believe they have entered not guilty pleas at this point. But that happened in the first ward. Robert Landon's ward was the first ward. And it seemed to me like there was a lot of campaigning going on in the first ward, certainly on the Republican side, that wasn't going on in other places. I don't know. I would imagine Robert Landon probably hit the first ward pretty hard because he felt he could get a lot of votes there because that was his ward, and he had won that ward before. I know Kevin Norris, who had run for mayor, was in that ward quite a bit, and obviously your opponent was out in that ward. Do you think from the Republican side it was hit harder than other wards?
I do. I just think that with the math they were probably doing behind it, they figured we can pick up some votes here, maybe swing a ward. And then not only that, but it was known kind of the whole time that this seat was probably going to be the swing seat that decided who had council. So when you have the opportunity to maybe flip the ward, and in your mind, if you're thinking, well, this could win me mayor, this could win me auditor, this could win me the council majority, then it makes a little bit of sense as to why they're putting so much stock in it.
Well, it's, again, another interesting question is, obviously we know Robert Landon went on to defeat Kelly Carr for the auditor's position, so he did okay, obviously citywide, but you still were able to win the first. So do you think in your mind there were obviously a good majority of people who voted for Robert Landon, their former councilman, to be auditor, but voted for you to be their councilperson?
Yeah, I'd say that there has to be at least a decent amount, just because, well, for one, at the doors, I was always very clear that I was running to try to improve our community, not to get super partisan one way or another. I don't think you really get too much done when you start hugging your side of the aisle. So I think that there had to have been at least a decent sized group who made that switch, and more power to them. You know, some people vote split ticket like that.
Well, some interesting things have happened since the election, and now that we know that this is a done deal. Oh, by the way, how did your opponent react when the results came in? Because he was there yesterday.
Yes, he was very polite. He shook my hand and congratulated me. After that, we just went our separate ways. We'd been there for long enough that I think that we were both just getting kind of hungry. We were just trying to get out of there once we knew the results.
When the result finally came down, after all this time, because you had been there for the provisional count, you had been there obviously for the recount, you obviously had to have this on your mind over the holiday season. How confident were you going in yesterday?
Gosh, I was pretty confident just because I knew that the systems we had were pretty updated and they were pretty airtight as far as the results go. Whereas in the past, maybe I wouldn't have been as confident just because I think in 2015 with Hale and Mike Thomas, it did change a little on the recount. But I know with our new systems, it's almost like, to my knowledge, it's almost like your vote is being double checked as it goes through, because you're putting it in on the machine and then you're putting the paper ballot in. And so those results are almost already being double checked when they come out. So I knew on election, or after, I knew with the recount, it was very unlikely that anything would change.
Is this the closest race in city council history? I mean, I guess we go back to prehistoric times, but I would say in the last 100 years, I've never heard of anything like this.
You know, I'm not the biggest Marion Council buff as far as history goes and the election results, but I would guess that, you know, it doesn't get much closer. So maybe there's a couple ties out there that had to be decided on a coin flip, but it's got to definitely go down in the top 10.
Well, and it's also interesting because we talk about young people not getting involved in politics, and if you go back and look at city council pictures 30, 40, 50 years ago, it's a lot of older people who are on city council. Now, at this point, certainly in modern times, do we believe that you now, and we can safely say, are the youngest person elected to city council?
That's, to my knowledge, true. I've reached out to a couple different people, and they've reached out to me just asking if I'd like to know or and things like that, and so far no one's gotten back to me. So if someone knows differently, let me know. I think that there's been some young ones, but I don't think there's been anyone younger than 22.
As far as the Democratic Party goes, we had talked for a long time that since 2016, only one Democrat had won in Marion County. But this time, the mayor wins re-election. Two seats are flipped on city council. City council is now Democrat again. How do you think the Democrats feel? What's the mood in that party, locally?
Well, I think it depends who you talk to, but I think for the most part we feel pretty good about just the way everything went. It's good to have council back. And so I think that there was a lot of assumptions that the Dems might be dead in the water. And I kind of just knew, I knew that we had to show up and we had to prove that wasn't the case. But that for the last probably year or so, I knew that we had a pretty good shot at taking it back.
Now, as far as doing things in the first ward, what now are your major concerns?
Right now, what I need to do is figure out what committees where everyone's going to be on, because that lets you kind of get your foot in the door first on policy and changes. But one of the big things that I've talked about a lot and I've said needs to be addressed is the speeding going on in the neighborhood. That's going to be one of my bigger policy goals is to try to curb it in some way or another, especially if it can be done long term. And then really other than that, I want to put more police officers on the streets because a lot of cars are getting broken into, and I want to make people feel safe in my neighborhood.
Now, what can a city council person do as one vote of many to make changes like that?
Well, what you can do is you can, it's a lot of behind the scenes work that can be done. You can make sure you have the votes for specific policy. You can go back and talk to the police chief and things like that and say, hey, what do you need? Sometimes it's more police officers, but sometimes it's more just gear or something like that. So when you're putting together a budget and things like that that needs approved through council, you can be more educated on it and make sure that the money gets spent in the right way and you're not just throwing money at a problem, and making sure that you're spending all your time on council as efficiently as possible.
When we look back at city council and we look at the election that just happened, there have been some interesting things, as I say, that have happened after the election. One is Becky Gustin, who was a Democrat at-large city council person who did win re-election, resigned her seat, and now that has been filled by former city councilman Mike Thomas. What did you make of that situation?
You know, I think I was just as surprised as everyone else. I knew that Becky had been trying to sell her house for a long time, and it wasn't taken. Nobody was biting on it, and then it kind of out of the blue, someone finally took it, but she had been trying to sell it for a long time. And then so once she did resign, it was kind of sad because you don't want to see her leave council, but we knew that that someone was going to have to replace her, and I think they just went from there.
Do you think Mike Thomas is a good choice?
Yeah, I think he brings a lot of experience to the job, whereas with this is a very new council that will you know, I've been going to council meetings since, gosh, for a long time, but for a lot of people, that's not the case. And so for a lot of people, there's going to be some inexperience going on. And I think that Mike, whether or not you agree with him or disagree with him on policy, he's more formalized, more normalized, I guess, to the rules and the way things work on council, which can have its benefits. And if you're on his side, it has its benefits. And if you're disagreeing with him on something, it probably is a little annoying.
Now, what do you think? Were there a lot of behind the scenes wranglings when Becky announced she was going to leave?
Not to my knowledge. So I guess that means that there wasn't a whole lot of good wranglings going on. You know, you want people to know if you want to be on council, not to my knowledge, there was no back rooms filled with smoke deciding it, but you never know. But yeah, like I said, to my knowledge, there it was pretty cut and dry.
One thing we talked about here at the station, because it was just interesting, because we had you on two or three times leading up to the election, and we had this caller who called in who lived in the first ward, and I believe the first time he called in, I think you were here or Tara Dyer was here.
I think it was Tara.
Tara was here. And he had called in and said he was a Republican and had voted Republican in the first ward, but that he was unsure of who he was going to vote for because you had approached him and spoken to him, and the Republican had not, and he did not like that. And then the night, I believe, it was either the night or the next day after the League of Women Voters debate, when your opponent did not show up, that's when he called in and said for sure he was voting the Democrat ticket. Now, what's interesting about that we did not know at the time was that it was going to come down to one vote.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, we can't say that's the vote that swung it, but that would have been a vote that typically would have went in the other direction.
Yeah.
And this is a person who did vote.
Yeah, it just goes to show one of the key things that I really started with was just being involved in the community, being out there talking to as many voters as possible, showing up at every event, and you know, trying to be the first one there and the last one to leave, talking to people. And it goes to show it pays off, apparently, if not just for one extra vote. It really makes the difference.
In the long term, not showing up to the League of Women Voters event, do you think that hurt the Republicans more or helped them? Because Robert Landon got elected, but Kevin Norris did not, your opponent did not, Billy Mayberry did not, and I believe those were the ones who did not show. Now, the ones who showed, I think they all got reelected.
Yeah, and I don't think that there is a positive way to spin not showing up, really. I think that there's a way, depending on how you word it and what's going on, I think there's a way you get out of it without negative repercussions, but you don't get anything positive out of it. And I think that as a candidate, you should always be trying to gain votes. And if you're not playing, if you're not gaining votes, then you're probably losing votes.
It was an interesting strategy because we had never seen that before. During the League of Women Voters event, because it had been advertised that your opponent was going to show up, when he didn't, what did you think?
I was very surprised, to be honest with you, just because the seat was next to me. And so as the clock kind of got closer to, I don't know, I can't remember when it started, 7 or 8, I just expected, all right, like, starts in a minute. He's going to come rushing in, and then we're going to have this debate. But it just never happened. And so then after that, I kind of just threw the playbook out the window and ran with it.
You know, it's an interesting topic when somebody comes up to you in a restaurant and starts talking about it. And an interesting topic right now in Marion is the pay raises for, I believe, the mayor and some city officials. Now, for people who don't understand this, or who have only maybe read about it in periodicals, like the newspaper, what is this in a tin-type fashion as far as you understand it?
So I believe that they're raising the auditor, the mayor, and the council's pay for the first time in 4 years. The raises vary in percentages of increase, but they're doing it in the if it was Congress, you'd call it the lame duck session before like I get sworn in and things like that. But to my knowledge, you kind of have to do it that way.
So this will take effect next year,
yeah,
if it passes.
This will take effect next year. So say Debbie Blevins votes yes on it, she won't see any of that pay, because she has someone else coming in for next year.
So it will also raise city council?
Yes, I think it raises it from $7,300 to $9,000. Gosh, I don't think I would want to be there for that vote. I can't see myself voting yes for that one, just because when I ran, I ran on let's making sure that we tighten our belts on things. But, you know, the budget just came out yesterday, or not the budget, but a proposed budget, and so it's probably a rough draft. So maybe I'll look at it, and we'll see that there's the money's there. But you know, I can't see myself voting yes on that.
Now, when does the vote on this happen?
I believe the first reading already occurred, and at the next council meeting, they'll be able to put it through.
So, next week?
Yes.
Now, were you surprised by the negative backlash on this? Or would you say there's a negative backlash?
I would say that in the past, there's been bigger negative backlashes that have occurred on pay raises. I think that while there definitely was a negative backlash, and to some rightly so, it's just one of those things that this time, just like our turnout, has just been, I feel like, diluted. There just hasn't been the same response as before. Because I remember, and if I'm getting this wrong, I'm sorry, but I think when the law director was getting a pay raise, people were really up in arms about it. It was there was quite a few people at council and everything like that. And well, really, right now, all we have to judge by it are our Facebook comments. But it seems like it's people just aren't as focused on it as before. But you never know. Maybe there'll be a storm of people at the next council meeting. I'll be there. So I kind of am excited to see what happens.
With the city council members who are there, who will be voting on this, in your opinion, being at city council meetings, following politics, being involved with the Democratic Party, soon to be taking a seat, would you bet at this point it passes or fails?
I have a pretty good guess that I think it's going to pass. I think it'll pass pretty overwhelmingly, is my guess. I think that from what I've heard about the last reading, because I unfortunately could not make that meeting. I've got finals coming up, so I've been studying, getting ready to graduate. But it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of backlash this time around from council.
Now, it's interesting because Robert Landon will get to vote on this, and he will not. He would not normally have a vote after he leaves his position. Becky Gustin will have a vote, who will not have a vote after this. Debbie Blevins, same thing. Rick Huddle, same thing. I think those are the ones. So four of the people who will be voting on this pay raise will no longer be there after...
Yeah, I mean, and I...
We'll never see it, I guess, is the way to say it.
Yeah, it kind of goes... There's some pros and cons to that. You know they're not voting just to raise their own pay, just because they won't be there. But it kind of just goes to show that elections have consequences. Just because of the massive turnover that we're going to see from this election.
Do you think the new council that will come in after the first of the year would... You say you would not vote for this. You don't think?
No, I don't believe that I would, just because, we ran on tightening belts and you know, making sure that the money went where it was, where it really needed to go, and so... It just seems like it would be going back on a campaign promise if I just turned around and voted for this.
Do you think that the new council would vote it in?
Oh, I have no clue. Just because there are some new members that I haven't really got a chance to speak to and pick their brain about stuff. So, I can't be sure one way or another.
What would you say to the community who are putting up the negative Facebook posts, who are writing the negative comments on the Marianne Stars page? Why is this okay?
Well, I don't know if I would just go from use the framing of that it's okay or not okay. I think it's important to know that, you know, I hear you. I think that there's a good point to be made. I think that they're raising good points, and I think that they need to be heard, and I think that it's something that definitely needs to be looked at as far as why are we doing this necessarily.
It's an interesting thing because right off the bat, there are going to be some heavy issues, I think, for the new city council to deal with, or at least repercussions from the old one that they'll have to deal with.
Yeah, you're going to be looking at, well, you got to pass the budget right off the bat, and then after that you're going to have... just a lot of big stuff, and it depends. Like, I think that housing codes is definitely going to come back. We haven't seen the last of that. And then, who knows? I think that recycling will continue to be an issue. Hopefully we can address speeding right away and just move on from there.
How big in your mind a deal is your position on city council?
I think it's a big deal because you're the representative for your community and your ward. So I think that one of the big issues that I made about city council is the amount of effort you put into your job, because I think that your ability to do it and the things you can get done are amplified by effort. And so if you are, you know, trying to get on as many committees as possible and things like that, and you are working behind the scenes to make sure you have votes here and figuring out, hey, what, or figuring out maybe if what streets that really need paved compared to other ones, and just making the effort, you know, speaking to the voters and things like that, then you're a much stronger official than if you're not.
Now, the last time we had a change in council, which was 2017, when we went into the new council in January of 2018, there was a big kerfluffle with city council and the clerk and a whole bunch of stuff that went into that. Do you foresee anything like that happening this time now that city council swinging back the other way?
No, I really don't. I think that'll stay the same. No one has expressed any interest to me in making any changes there. I think people are pretty happy with the way things are being run on that side. So I don't think that there'll be that much drama. And even if there was, I that's not why I ran. That's not why I got in this. So I don't really have interest in being a part of it.
Overall, what do you think the makeup of Marion is right now? A lot of people feel confident about certain things. A lot of people feel unconfident. It's a weird dynamic right now.
I would say for the first time, there's an undeniable sense of growth. The magnitude is up in the air. How much you want to say it's playing a role, whether it be downtown or other areas of growth, but there's definitely something there, and I think that before there wasn't always that. So I think that there's a new hope that that we can really pull from and that we can build on, that I think we can do a lot with. Whereas before, I think people were kind of just in the doldrums. They were kind of just upset with the way Marion was going, and they didn't really have an area to look at and say, oh, well, we have growth here. Here's a positive note. And I think that if we really focus on the positive and improving that and just try to expound on that and grow it, we'll see a lot of good things come to our town.
Where do we say that comes from? Where has this growth come from? What has caused it?
As far as what's caused it, I think that we were seeing a new generation of people kind of take the lead on a lot of issues downtown. That's where a lot of the growth is taking, but I don't think that we can point to a single generation and say this is where the growth is coming from specifically. But I will say that the downtown is beginning to look revitalized, and I think that you really cannot look at downtown compared to, say, 8 years ago and say it's the same place, because we're seeing new businesses pop up left and right, and I think that it's just really a place that you can look at and know that, you know, this town's kind of, we're on a comeback.
Is the economic situation for the average person, the average family, do you think that's on the comeback? Because that's been talked about for a long time. The population not moving much for many, many years in Marion. The wages not being the average for many, many years. Is that on the uptick? Do you think when the new census comes out next year that we will see a big change there?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. I will say that one of the things that I'd like to focus on, say if I get on jobs and economic development, is working with business leaders on how to get a workforce more involved, making sure that people know about the jobs that do exist, making sure that people understand that, you know, in certain fields there's a swath of different jobs to choose from, and others there's not as many, but just making sure people know what's there, and really working with people to find the opportunities that are not only grow new opportunities but notice new opportunities, because I think that sometimes it does really just come down to not knowing what's out there. I'll give an example that kind of makes me look a little silly. I did not know that until a few years ago that Wyandotte would start you off quite a bit higher than a lot of other places of similar work, but it's just one of those things that, you know, with education, as far as like what's out there, you can make a lot of inroads and make more money.
Do you think the mood of the city has changed? Because for a long time, one of the things that people always talked about was that people who lived in Marion seemed to be upset. People seemed to be a little downtrodden on the city itself. Do you think that's starting to change?
I think the wheels are starting to move on it. I'm not going to say that we're 100% positive about everything right now, but I would say that there's a changing, there's the wheels are moving on I think the mood in our town, and I think the people are starting to see, like I said, the growth downtown and some things going on other parts of the town that are giving people a new reason to believe in what we can do here.
When we look back at the election of 2019, it was an interesting election from many points as far as the way people campaign. You had talked about it. A lot of the nasty remarks, a lot of the negative campaigning, a lot of the comments in general came through Facebook. Now, do you think there's any correlation between that and a lower voter turnout? That this is no longer happening in the newspaper. This is no longer happening on radio. It's happening on a forum that a lot of people don't use.
You know, I think that I can't see it playing a large role in turnout necessarily. I do think that there are some people who see the negativity and they kind of just say, all right, I don't want to be involved with this. But I don't see it having a mass role in how many people turn out one way or another. But I will say that this year we did have a lot of there were a few negative remarks sprinkled here and there by both sides of the aisle.
But it seems to happen now on social media, which was not in the game years ago. Is that a way to reach people? Is that a way to win elections?
I think that social media is a important aspect of a campaign as far as Facebook goes. I think that it's important to know how to campaign with it. Because you might find yourself, if you don't know what you're doing on Facebook, you might kind of find yourself just shouting into a wind tunnel, just because there are so many people. And so that if you don't really know what you're doing, it's always good to get help, and it's always good to improve on that, because I think that Facebook is a... Most candidates know that Facebook is a valuable tool. It's not what you can base your campaign off of. You got to base your campaign off of knocking doors and talking to voters face to face. But I would say, as far as Facebook goes, most people know that it's important. I would say most people don't know how to use it for campaigning purposes.
One of the things that was interesting this time, and I don't know if you would agree or disagree with this, but for the first time ever locally, I saw very little use of local radio and the local newspaper. Very few ads were run on local radio. Very few ads were run in the local newspaper. And those used to be the places people ran ads up until 2 years ago. People were still doing it that way. Do you think that could have caused a lower voter turnout? That there were the voting population tends to be an older population. Always has been. I don't know what the numbers would state this time, but it seems to be that way. And those might be people who aren't on Facebook. And locally in Marion, how do you learn about a local candidate? I mean, do you want to know everything on Facebook?
Well, I would say you definitely don't want to just run a Facebook campaign. But the thing is, for instance, with my campaign, I knew that I could push. There's going to be some people that I just couldn't reach because of, say, they worked a different shift or something like that. And so I was going to use Facebook as a partial route to reach those people. But really what we were going to probably put 85 to 90% of our contact in was door-to-door. And so that way we didn't have to, you know, we didn't have to do the math on whether or not we thought the newspaper ad was going to be more valuable than a radio ad or was going to be more valuable than a Facebook ad. When you're putting your stock into face-to-face communication, which is free, you don't have to make that decision, or you don't have to make it as often, at least.
You had talked when you were here one time before the election about how there had been some negative remarks made about you on Facebook by your opponent. I think you even specified some of those at one point or another. You said you were not going to run that type of campaign. We're not going to do negative things. What do you think the overall impact of that was in the final analysis?
You know, you never really know what what remarks did the most, what did the most, and what, you know, maybe something was a home run and maybe something wasn't. In a local race, you can't really do the polling on how things work, so you kind of just have to run with it. I wanted to make sure that we kept it as positive as possible, but I also wanted people to know that, you know, I was gonna fight for them, and if I felt like someone made an offhand remark or something like that, that we weren't gonna just take it. And so that was kind of a strange thing to balance, but I think we did a pretty good job of it. And as far as specific comments having strong effects, I think that really probably the biggest event that wasn't just door knocking that probably swung it was probably League Night, is my guess.
Do you think that'll be rethought in 2 years or maybe next year?
Who knows? With the way the election went, I kind of hope not, just because it did work out well. But I think that, you know, we'll have, I think we'll go back to the drawing board on a couple things for us, and I have to imagine that the Republicans will too.
We have another election in 11 months, just about 11 months, moves that quickly, and there will be a lot of offices up next year, county offices, mostly. Do you know, are the Democrats looking at these positions? Because at this point, most of the county offices, I believe, are held by Republicans.
Yeah, I think that we're definitely looking at some of them and seeing where we can, you know, make some inroads. I always think that we should try to find as many people to run as possible. Primaries are always good. So if we can find, the more people we can find to run, the better. I think that it makes your party stronger, and I think that it gets more people involved that might not have been involved before. And so I think with some of these county offices, I think that we should try to take as strong of a look as possible. I'm not involved in the in that as much as I used to be, just because I'm a candidate now. But yeah, like I said, I think that as far as our county-wide races go, I hope that we put forward a large swath of candidates.
We know that next year we'll have a much higher turnout because it is a presidential year, and that usually has the highest turnout of the four-year election cycle that we have. Do you think that will benefit the Republicans or not, knowing what we know about Ohio now and seeing how votes have went the last 4 years?
You know, typically, recently, you want to say that it might be a little bit more beneficial for Republicans, but, you know, you never know how things are going to turn. For instance, in 2016, Marion went from being like a little red to very red in the presidential cycle. So things can twist and turn, depending on what's happening in the news, what the candidates say, and what their organizing is like. For instance, I'll say that in 2016, the Dems from an organizational standpoint, didn't have someone from the presidential campaign here all the time campaigning like they did back in 2008. And so it really depends. I think that who has people on the ground doing the work in these rural suburban areas makes a big difference.
We talked about this during the election. Does the D and the R matter? When we, again, look at the final analysis, did it matter on election day?
You know, locally, I think that it doesn't matter as much as especially as presidentially. I think people are much more, I'm a Democrat, so I vote Democrat, or I'm a Republican, so I vote Republican. But locally, I think people are much more willing to, you know, hear you out, because I think that local elections are much more about just who can do the job better, who can fix the street, who can fix the sewers, who can address putting more police officers out there for us. So I think that's why the D and the R don't matter as much when it comes to local politics. And as you go up, it just tends to matter more as far as statewide compared to local.
When we look at being elected to city council, and probably the youngest person ever elected to city council, unless somebody tells us differently, obviously, you haven't thought about running for other offices at this point. You just got through this race. But do you see yourself being involved in politics for a long period of time?
You know, I have no clue. I think that it's about I've been elected to city council to help where I can from there, and I think that there's just a lot of improvements that we do need to make there, and I think that right now I'm just focused on getting those things done, and I think that it's going to be a long process to really go for to get those done, and I think that looking any further down the road is just would just be kind of foolish of me.
Something interesting about the last election, if you look at everybody who ran, there were very few new faces. People who had either been on city council before or held another position or had already run for something else before. Two of the new faces, who people who had never run for anything before and had never held a position in local government, were you and Kathy Swanger. There were some others, but do you think that helps now? Is that a good thing, to be somebody who is not submerged in this political field?
You know, I think it depends on your experience. I think that it depends on the way, I guess, you've held yourself over time, the battles you've been in, if any. And I think that sometimes there are some people who just want a clean slate. They don't want to deal with politics as usual, and there's always the good question for incumbents and people that have been there for a while of, if you're talking about a policy change you want to make, why haven't you done it already? And I think that in a lot of instances that's a fair criticism.
Do you think the makeup of city council looks good?
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of new faces, there's a lot of new, I guess there's just a lot of new things on the table, and I think that with council being as close as it is, you almost don't have to worry as much about it being even locally. If you are someone that buys into local partisanship, you don't really have to worry about it being locally too partisan compared to another, just because how close it actually is.
Are we going to see those stories about the parties fighting with each other? Are we going to see that because the Democrats hold a majority, they all voted together, and that's how something got passed?
You know, I hope not. I'm willing to work with anybody to get something done to improve our community, whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent. I think that you have to put the party aside when you're improving your community. Party identification has its place in some areas, but I think that when you're trying to improve for the future and improve Marion, I think that you really have to put that to the side, and if you can't, you're probably not going to get much done.
What's the thing that can be done the quickest that will affect the most people in Marion come 2020?
I'm not 100% sure. It depends on the order of which we decide to put things forward. Right now I've got the budget on my mind more than anything, but I think that it's just really up in the air as far as what we push forward first. There's just a lot of things that are going to carry over from 2019 that I think we have to hash out first and get done, from building codes, from the recycling situation, which, like I said, I don't think is done and over with. And if it doesn't reappear now, I think it'll reappear a while down the line. And just a different aspects from 2019, I think that they're going to carry over into the first month or so of 2020, and I think that once we get those out of the way, we can really start focusing on the issues at hand. I keep harping on it, but one of the things that I really want to address is speeding and doing what we can in the first ward to the Fair Park Speedway.
How would you sum up your first race in one word?
Intense.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we can safely say for the first time now, your next first ward city council person, Democrat Kai Mead, after a long process, election night, provisional ballots, and a mandatory recount. Well, congratulations, Kai. We thank you for coming on, and we hope you come back in the future to give us updates on what's going on in city council.
Thank you for having me.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with much more.
Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Nestled all snug in it, while visions of sugar plums just danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief